Giving even odds, this one would come true. And even money is better than no chance at all. At 18 minutes after 7, a lanky young man shambled onto the runway, stride unhurried, shoulders hunched, eyes on his scuffed shoes. His lucky hat, a battered brown felt fedora, set a little rakishly. The way he walked to his plane, he could have been going to the corner for a 2-cent newspaper, instead of embarking on an aerial argosy to challenge Charles Lindbergh's transatlantic record. From Paris, he planned to keep on flying, around the top of the world, faster than anyone had ever flown. The silver wing of the Lockheed was burnished gold in the setting sun. He climbed into the cockpit, slid open the window, and waved, one quick, awkward motion. The big monoplane, 65 feet from wingtip to wingtip, lumbered down the runway, its huge aluminum belly filled with 1,500 gallons of flammable fuel. Any glitch, and it could explode, as the Hindenburg did the year before in New Jersey. Lifting over Long Island, he turned the plane and followed the sound. In his breast pocket was a note from his girl, promising an answer when he returned. From the pier in Fenwick, an exclusive seaside enclave that curls around old Saybrook, Connecticut, a slender redhead watched the darkening sky. Over the sound of the sea came a distant purr that deepened into a roar. A silver bullet shot out of the west. Katharine Hepburn began waving both arms over her head. The Lockheed streaked along the Connecticut shore, dipped a wing over the Fenwick Pier, then headed out to cross the Atlantic. She waved until the sky was empty. Hepburn's affair with the dashing young pilot Howard Hughes was as romantic as a Hollywood movie. Hughes wanted to marry her, and he was flying around the world, 14,716 miles, over some of the roughest, most remote terrain, waiting for her answer. Actress and aviator were two of a kind, handsome, high-spirited, and iron-willed. He called her the most totally magnetic woman in the entire world. She said their affair was sheer heaven. I was madly in love with him, and he about me. In the summer of 38, Hughes was the more famous of the two. At 33, he was one of the richest, most glamorous bachelors in America. Hepburn's career was in freefall. Declared box office poison by the press after 7 straight flops, she had bought out her studio contract and moved home to her family's summer retreat on the Connecticut shore. If Hepburn was daunted, she didn't let on. The movie version of Gone with the Wind was going into production, and she had set her sights on playing Scarlett O'Hara. The quintessential Connecticut Yankee playing the ultimate Confederate belle might seem incongruous, but Hepburn identified with Scarlett. The Fenwick House was her Tara. Hepburn was author Margaret Mitchell's first choice for the role, and director George Cukor was squarely in Kate's corner. But producer David O. Selznick wanted a Scarlett with sex appeal, and he didn't think Hepburn, all angles and arrogance, had any. "Frankly, my dear," he would tell her, "I can't see Rhett Butler chasing you for 12 years. By the time Hepburn received his ultimate rejection, it was the end of September, and Fenwick, like Tara, was gone with the wind. Chapter 1. A Perfect Day. At the tail end of the bleakest summer in memory, weeks as gray as weathered shingles and drenching downpours, September 21st arrived in southern New England like a gift from the gods. The surf was spectacular, the best of the season. Long breakers rolling in, crescendos of sparkling foam, the water temperature surprisingly warm, and no pesky seagulls to swoop off with lunch. Silky cirrus threaded across a pastel sky, and the tang of salt was on the hot air, the air itself motionless, as if time had paused to savor the moment. For vacationers lingering after Labor Day, this was the reprieve they had hoped for, a last perfect beach day. The morning began softly on Narragansett Bay, just the flat, steady slap of the sea against the wooden hulls of the fishing boats, easing out of the harbors of Rhode Island at first light. Through a thin morning fog, the sun was a silver-white dollar, promising a bright day. The beam from the Beavertail Lighthouse at the southern tip of Jamestown Island guided the boats out. The goose-like honk of the lighthouse horn and the random shout of one fisherman to another carried a